Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole.
Hello.
Hello, Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Cole and Chris Casso.
Bork. Bork, bork.
How is everybody today?
It is a...
We're having a giggle fest now.
We're having a giggle fest.
You're going to have to listen to last week's episode butted up against this one so you can wallow in the mirth.
All right, yes, go revisit Cole's Norse mythology quiz time. And we just had ourselves a little giggle over the pronunciation and definition or translation of some of these names. Is quite fun.
Yes.
All right. So anyway, let's kind of switch gears now.
Let's talk about now.
Well, we don't have to be serious,
okay,
but buckle up and sit down. Okay. We're going to talk about educational comics. Now, we've talked about educational comics in the past. We've talked about comics that, like, say, focus on math. There's a fun episode of Squirrel Girl where she gives an instruction on how to count in binary. But let's put this all together. Let's do our final project on educational comics and hand it in for a full grade. Let's decide which comics should be taught in some standard classes. Now, I'm going to give you some classes from a high school style schedule, and I will admit that the classes I'm giving you is, to the best of my memory, the classes I took when I was a senior in high school. And you tell me which comics should be on the syllabus for each class. Now, the first one is kind of cheating. It's homeroom. It's where you go before school technically starts, just hang out. You know, sometimes it's an assigned class. Sometimes it's the library. But what should you read first thing in the morning? Maybe you're just still kind of wiping the sleep out of your eyes, getting ready for a full day of classes.
Understanding comics.
Understanding comics is a good one.
Get you started for the rest of this,
Scott
this
McCloud,
class here.
Yeah.
See, I'm lazy, so I'm like, just read something fun, slice of life. You know, read like Giant Days or, you know.
Am I the only one at the table that actually was reading comic books in his home room in
Probably.
High school?
Probably, yeah.
I read comics at home.
So do you recall, like, when you were going to high school and you were reading comics before class, what do you remember anything? Like, what era, what you were reading?
Yeah, the era that I'm mired in that most, you know, dictated my tastes now that I'm trying to shuck off. You know, I was reading Vernon Claremont X-Men, Marv Wolfman and George Perez, Teen Titans, Master Kung Fu, Mike Zeck and Doug Mensch, and what other things was I really digging on then?
Man-Thing?
No, it wasn't in the Man-Thing back then. Mm. And then, of course, that's when we first, Camelot 3000, Ballin's Camelot 3000. I would slip them into my notebooks so I could keep them flat, you know, because I was mindful of them not getting too battered up. But they were in my, I always had a comic book somewhere, secreted on me somewhere, all through high school.
There's the bell. It's time to go to our first period class.
Oh, bummer.
Which is Mr. Miller's Biology, room 203. What's on the syllabus for biology? Now, Mr. Miller's kind of a fun teacher.
Is he? What makes him fun?
I don't know. Biology.
Bad puns.
Only instructor we have all day that doesn't bore the doorknobs.
Love me a teacher who likes his dad jokes. All right, so what comics are in biology class?
Human Body Theater.
Human Body Theater is a good one, yeah.
And Science Comics Viruses.
Mm-hmm. And Plagues. Yeah. Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like biology to be like / sex education, even though it's not on here, and have things like...
Fair enough.
Oh Joy sex toy, even though it can be very specific to sex toys, it does also...
Where in the country are we?
In my imaginary happy land.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying because there are a lot of things, like Human Body Theater does talk about reproductive stuff, but people have actually said that they can't bring that into school because it talks about, like, a uterus or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just going on the total end of the spectrum in a fantasy land.
Yeah.
Where we learn about things that are important to our life.
Yeah, when I was in high school, we had sex ed in a, quote, health class, which is where they teach teenagers to shower on a daily basis. there's the bell. It's time to go to our next class, second period, Mrs. Larson's World History class.
Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales. And for examples, Nicole's got a list of the available volumes.
Treaties, Trenches, The Donner Dinner Party, One Dead Spy, Big Bad Ironclad, Raid of No Return, Alamo All-Stars, and Underground Abductor. And a lot of these talk about either war or traveling west or like the Underground Railroad, mm-hmm. the Alamo, things like that.
Okay.
And
Treaties and Trenches is World War One, I think.
I think so, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they each have a hazard level on the back where they tell you the time frame, and they're all different colors. I'll be reviewing one later, and I'll talk about that a little more in depth.
And I would recommend a book that I reviewed a couple of weeks back, Gettysburg,
yeah.
the graphic novel by C.M. Butzer. Chris did look to see if it was available through Diamond. Sadly, it's not. Hopefully you could, if I do recommend this book, so hopefully you can find it through HarperCollins,
mm-hmm.
Bowen Press, HarperCollins. Mm-hmm.
There's also a graphic adaptation of the United States Constitution written by Jonathan Hennessy and Aaron McConnell.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
You can always get into like more specific biographies too if you want to talk about things. Josephine Baker did a lot of activism. You could do the March series as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's more American history, but
all right. Well, there's the bell. It's time to go to third period, and this is advanced Spanish taught to us today by Señora Bachman.
Yeah.
What are we reading in Spanish class today?
The only thing we can order from Diamond that's in Spanish, Walking Dead, Volume 1 through 4.
Really? That's the only title available.
The one that we were wishing to get was Princeless, and that's been on limbo for like 3 years now.
Yes.
Does it have to be work in Spanish, or can it be works by Hispanic creators like the Hernandez brothers?
Well, advanced Spanish, usually everything's in Spanish in the classroom, so that's why I would think it would have to be in Spanish.
All right, fine. I don't want to take this class.
You need a foreign language credit to graduate, sir.
You could talk to the teacher and see if they will allow the Love and Rocket series, considering there's a lot of culture and heritage.
There's a lot of culture and heritage in
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Really sad thing, back in high school for me, it took our class the longest time to figure out that our teacher's senior cafe was actually Mr. Brown that was on the syllabus. That took way longer than it should have to figure out.
All right.
No, sorry.
Yeah. The bell's ringing, and we have lunch right now, so we're just going to go sit by ourselves and read our comics. Yeah, what are we reading at lunch? This isn't on the syllabus.
With the hay.
Lunch isn't generally on the syllabus. I just now thought.
Manga, because you can read it fast.
Delicious in the Dungeon.
Yep, done.
Yep.
Spaceball lunchtime.
Lunchtime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, Brave Chef Brianna.
Yes, yeah.
All right, so the bell rings. We're off to fourth period phys ed, PE as people call it. We get to go and go to the gym and hit the locker rooms and change into our running shorts and go join our classmates out in the gymnasium. What are we reading?
So I thought you got us on this one, but I found this book about to arrive in 2 months' time,
mm-hmm.
Dodge City. Thomas is the newest member of the Jazz Pandas dodgeball team.
Yeah.
And he's got a certain knack for keeping an eye on the ball, or several, exclamation mark. However, he is new, untested, and still not quite part of the team. But if the Jazz Pandas want to make it to summer regional championships, they have to pull together and learn to work as a team.
I now remember seeing that in previews because Jazz Pandas. Jazz Pandas.
There's also a comic called Fence, which is about competitive fencing.
Yep.
And there's another one about fencing called Foil, and a sequel called Foiled Again. Curses Foiled Again.
And there's also roller derby comics like Slam, which was also by Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So we have to hit the locker room and change back into our street clothes about 10 minutes before the bell rings. So, there's the bell. Now it's time to go to trigonometry in fifth period. Trigonometry, man, it's so hard.
I've already
got accepted to college. Why do I have to take a math class?
I didn't make it that far. I barely made it through geometry.
I love math.
So the only thing I could think of that actually works, because you can give this to the kids and tell them this is why you have to learn your math, punk, is The Imitation Game, the Alan Turing Decoded book. And here's the brief write-up of it. English mathematician and scientist Alan Turing is credited with many of the foundational principles of contemporary computer science. The Imitation Game presents a historically accurate graphic novel biography of Turing's life, including his groundbreaking work on the fundamentals of cryptography mm-hmm. and artificial intelligence. His code-breaking efforts led to the cracking of the German Enigma during World War II, work that saved countless lives and accelerated the Allied defeat of the Nazis. So learn your math. Mm-hmm. While Turing's achievements remain relevant decades after his death, the story of his life in post-war Europe continues to fascinate audiences today. So, yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. And thankfully, there's the bell. We're off to our final class yearbook staff. Now, this is where you and a bunch of other your compatriots pretend to be little journalists, and you try to document the year in photos and small fun bits and put together the yearbook for everybody to buy at the end of the year. It's like a job, because even after the bell rings when school's over, you still have to stay and finish what you were doing. What comics should we be reading while we're assembling the yearbook over the course of the year?
See, I didn't think about that journalism thing you just mentioned there.
Yeah, we were trying to think literal.
Yeah. There is CC's journal that just came out, which sounds like it's actually that exact thing almost.
Yeah.
So it's a new all ages book about a girl who's like, thinks she's a young journalist, and she's trying to figure out all these people's lives and secrets.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe
is she
that
a
one.
Photojournalist or just a journalist?
I'm not sure. Okay. I haven't read it yet.
I was going to say Evergreen. Originally, it's a manga. It's a 4-part manga. It's very slice of life. But they're not part of the yearbook club. They're part of the manga club. But there is like journalism as part of that, of like reading manga and having this little like zine. So it's adjacent to, but not quite.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Spiral Bound.
Spiral Bound.
That's kind of got the same feel for
it. It's got some of that.
That one's really cute. Yeah.
That one's like art class kids.
Yeah.
It's a little anthropomorphic tale.
Yeah.
And they're trying to solve a mystery of the town.
Something
as
weird
well.
In the town. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Cool. All right. Well, there's the bell, but we can't leave because we still have to do everything. And then, fortunately, we have our driver's license. We can just go home and move. So, thank you, friends. That was our tour across the high school landscape in comics. Let's move on to con etiquette. Now, it's the brand new year. It's still early on in the year, and we have all these comic conventions that are happening over the course of the year. And for those of you who plan on attending them, what are some hot tips, some pro tips? We can tell people before
Absolutely.
They hit the convention center.
Be clean. Be polite.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to take pictures of people, be polite about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, is that a convention? Like, if somebody cosplays as, you know, whatever, do you always have to ask permission to take the picture, or do people just like snap pictures willy nilly?
Generally, people stop because they can pose.
Right.
I think a lot of, I mean, you'd have to ask people who cosplay
right.
to really be sure. I don't really want to speak on their behalf. What I've observed is people asking,
it's
oh, can I
polite.
Please? Yeah.
I feel
so
like
that's
if you're
why,
about to capture their soul with your machine,
you might as well at least ask first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. A lot of people go and with the understanding that they're going to get stopped a trillion times because they're dressed as a certain character.
Right. They spent all year putting this thing.
Exactly.
Costume together.
And now this is like kind of their job.
Yeah. If you're a cosplayer and your costume has large pieces of weaponry, like let's say an oversized manga sword or something like that, be aware of the space you take said sword, and when you turn with that sword or hammer, and don't hit people many times.
Also, if you have like a big backpack or things like that, you know, be mindful of your space because it's going to be very crowded.
Yeah.
If you need to stop and figure out something, look something up, try to, if you can, move to the side, out of the pathway. You know, it's just a lot of like manners and paying attention to the fact that we're swarmed with humans.
Spatial awareness is something that a lot of people just kind of don't really think about.
Not always.
Yeah. How about how you interact? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You.
How about how you interact with industry folks.
Assume they're tired.
Yep.
Assume they've been there all day. Some of them might be standing up all day. And if they're being not nice to you, that's not great. But at the same time, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt that they've been dealing with many, 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 many humans. And for a while.
Yes.
And,
human beings aren't meant, we're not designed to be subjected to that, you know, wall of humanity you experience at a convention.
Well,
like that.
It's just
our
a lot of
just not wired for
it's a lot of stimulus in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are two different ways that you interact, two different circumstances where you can interact with an industry folk. There's where you like stand in line, you pay to have your picture taken with them or whatever, or if you just randomly see somebody you know walking on the floor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just like walking to the bathroom or whatever. do you stop them?
Leave them alone if they're in the bathroom.
Well, if they're in the bathroom, yes.
I would say leave them alone if they're not at their booth, because that's their time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on the degree of their fame, like, I, to this day, I'm still really pissed off that this was years ago. Chris was kind enough to get me a volunteer gig for a group called Comixology, and I stood right across from Robert Kirkman. I brought my first issue of Walking Dead so I could have him sign it, and I, you know, but I never had time to leave the booth and get a freaking number to stand in line, so I never got it signed. I also didn't realize how much it was worth at that time, and it was worth a lot of money. And I should not have had it in my bag underneath the table, but that's another story. Plan ahead for those things. Don't be like Cole. Plan ahead. You know, you got to get a number a lot of the time. Most folks know this by this point. But.
Yeah.
With creators and with retailers or vendors there, just be aware that oftentimes they're being attacked from all sides.
Yeah.
So don't occupy their time completely. Try and just read the situation as much as you can. See if there's a line of people. See if the person you're talking to looks like they just are trying to kind of move things on to be polite to everyone. If they're already dealing with something like taking money from someone, don't like start poking them in the back. Don't poke people. Don't poke people.
It's a sad stereotype, I think, is portrayed with fans of this community where they don't really have the best social graces.
Right.
And Nicole, you have worked the Comics Dungeon booth at Emerald City Comic Con. If you could just say one thing to like everybody to help them deal with you, what would you tell them?
To help them deal with me.
Well, I mean, to make the transaction go as smoothly as possible. Like, if there's one, is there one consistent thing that the people do when they come up to you at the booth?
I mean, there's a lot of people I know, so we'll want to schmooze a little bit, but I do have to try to like balance that and try to move on. But I mean, I think for me, like when I go up to a creator, I usually go in, I acknowledge them for something, I purchase something from them. You know, if they have time and they want to chat, great, but I tend to try to keep it kind of short and sweet because I know that their time and their energy is valuable. And there's even been times where I've like been with other people and I'm like, I think this is the time to go, but we're just sort of like standing there and I'm like, I think they're done talking to you, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I'm super friendly, so I will schmooze a lot, and I have to try to cut myself off.
But if you walk up to her with a bunch of $100 bills, we might be willing to talk longer to you.
This is true. I will give you a grand tour of the whole booth. We can go around. I'll be a personal shopper.
Money talks, man.
Just walk around the waving it like a fan, you know? So, yeah.
And consider visiting the independent creators, the folks who are... in Artist Alley, who are not rock stars, who have actually come to this convention, paid for it out of pocket, and are really kind of counting their pennies and hoping that they are going to get some exposure for their work
and
their efforts and their passions. I love visiting the Artist Alley and looking at the independent work. Sometimes there's some really inspired work, but also just consider that artists don't make any money, especially artists in that corner of the convention. They're doing it for love, and please look for an opportunity to give that love back to them.
Yeah,
you allow in your budget for a couple of indie things to pick up. That's what I'm doing every year now, because I have picked up some really cool things, like people who have literally printed and put together the comic themselves and bound it, and you know, have done those types of things. They're, you know, it's not short run, so but you know, I have some things that are web comics, and they're really cool. They're in print and stuff like that.
This one might not be completely applicable, but it's something I have to keep in mind when I am at the con. A lot of the people in the Artist Alley are artists and not businessmen. And they may not be familiar with certain situations and stuff. So just be patient.
Just
be willing to talk things out and figure it out with people in general. With people, that's the way to go.
Yeah,
I tend to grab business cards. Like if there's not something that I want to necessarily buy, but I want to check them out later. If they have an Etsy store or a Patreon or something like that, and you can consider supporting somebody that way and enjoying their material. So I usually have like a wealth of cards or postcards or something like that by the end of con.
I'd also like to say, I've never. I've never been to a con where I wasn't working something, and that was only the one time. But I would say if I had to give a piece of advice to somebody walking through Artist Alley, mm-hmm. if you see someone, a creator, just sitting at their table looking lonely and no one's talking to them, go up and talk to them. Mm-hmm. Talk, you know, ask them, you know, who they are, what they do. Be interested in their work, because mm-hmm. they probably have an interesting story, and they're there for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. That's a really good point.
Ooh, personal one. be very, very self-aware of who you're talking to. So bad story here. So I was working the con one time, and a customer of ours just was like, hey, that guy that we really liked that did that book that you recommended is here. It was a book called Outer Orbit. And the book was done by two people who both drew it. Their style was very similar. And so for whatever reason, I assumed he was talking about person A, and when I was talking to this person there, it turned out they were person B, but I referred to everything as person A, and they were so graceful. They were just like, oh, yeah, his work is really great. And I was just like, yes, can I buy something from you right now?
Oh, no.
So just have that awareness of who you're talking to, maybe.
Yeah. look at the sign. See if you can get names, yes. and you can put them together. Yes.
I have done that exact same thing, and I'm uh-huh. trying to think of both the artists. It's Vince Locke, and they're both the guys from Michigan. They started out doing Dead World together. And now I can't. The Marquis. The Marquis.
Guy Davis.
So Guy Davis.
And, glad we got that sorted out.
Guy Davis and Vince Locke. I do believe they grew up together drawing together as teenagers. Their styles were interlocking. I did the exact same thing. Mm. And I walked up to Vince and started praising Guy's work.
Yeah.
At least you were bad-mouthing his own work.
No, yeah, no. Yeah,
Your stuff is great. The other guy.
You know, they had very different person. One was very introverted, one was very extroverted. And I remember Vince Locke is a very introverted person, and he was mm-hmm. like, yeah, that was Guy's work.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It just puts everybody in a bad situation. Yeah.
I think I've done like that before, not to comic creators, but just in life.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Anyway, so.
It happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
Finally, most of all, just like support independent creators and local creators, mm-hmm. I think, at your con. Yeah, it's nice to meet Stan Lee, but, you know, it's your local comic book store that...
An artist. Deeper. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And stay hydrated and bring snacks.
Don't give Stan Lee anything super expensive to sign.
He has torn comics
before. He tears comics sometimes.
Really? I didn't know that.
It's a story somebody shared with me of like he was just so busy like going through so many things, and somebody didn't stop and tell him like, hey, we're giving you something very valuable here, and it was something like a Fantastic Four number one, and I think he tore the cover off because he was just doing fast motion like sign move.
And it was so fragile.
Yeah, something like that.
Although, you know, you probably could sell that on eBay. The comic that Stan Lee tore the cover off of
$1,000.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So, yeah, Emerald City Comic Con here in Seattle is going to be coming up. When is that? In May sometime?
It's the first week in March.
There's mm-hmm. also I Like Comic Con.
Yeah.
I keep on thinking as I Hate Comic Con because I think of the comic I Hate Fairyland. But I Like Comic Con is coming up in Vancouver in February. I don't know. Something like that. Look it up.
All right. Yeah, look it up. And Comics Dungeon, of course, is going to have a presence at Emerald City this year.
Absolutely. Yes.
Cool.
I will be there. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I will not.
It's 6 days now, isn't it? Is it a whole week?
It's four.
6 days?
Isn't the convention
it's
a whole
four,
week?
It's 4 days.
It's forever.
Okay. Oh. Forever. Yeah.
Okay. But for anybody participating, it's more like 6 or 7 days.
Yeah. There's a lot of prep that goes involved.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And let's start with me.
What? Yay!
One of the first trades I ever bought was Letter 44, which is recommended either by Chris or Nicole here.
Or both.
And or both, probably.
Crickle.
And so I've been collecting them and reading them as the trades have been coming out. And I number 5, volume 5, Blue Shift, recently came out. It's is it Jeff Sewell? I can't remember the name.
Charles Sewell.
Charles Sewell. Charles Sewell with...
Soul.
Soul.
Yeah, I got confirmation from him.
Oh, okay. from the horse's mouth.
I asked him because we kept calling him something different.
All right.
All I could think of is Zool from Ghostbusters.
Also, at Comic-Con, you can get pronunciations correct.
Yes, there you go.
It's got a every chapter is illustrated by a different person.
Oh, wow.
And I'll talk about that in a bit. But cover illustration is by Alberto Albuquerque, who I think he has done all the covers. His name is on all the books. So if he didn't, he didn't do the interior illustrations, he's at least done the covers. But yeah, it's basically the volume 5 of Letter 44 is to Letter 44 what Wizard and Glass is to the Dark Tower series. It basically it doesn't progress the story past the last page.
It took the longest hell time to come out.
This is all like the little snippets that were released monthly, and they all collected them. Because I think it jumps all over the place throughout, and that's why it seems odd.
And if you don't know that, it is super confusing when you start reading it, because you're like, what is going... Is it just the... So it basically, it's like the backstories of a lot of the characters that you know of. And you want to say something, Chris.
Here's why. It's issue 7, 14, 21, 28, 32.
Yeah.
So it jumps. That's why you get all the different artists.
It's all the, it's all the gap issues between the arcs.
Yes.
Oh, all right. So rephrase my analogy then. Mm-hmm. It is what volume 5, Blue Shift is to Letter 44 what Passmasters is to the Beatles catalog. What that does, that basically collects all of the singles and B-sides that aren't released on proper albums.
Gotcha.
All right. So,
nice work, Ben.
It is, you do get a sense of the different art style because, it's vaguely similar. It doesn't jump around. Like, I've been reading the, Rick and Morty trades, and they have some wacky art styles in some of those.
Yes.
for some of the different chapters. But one of the things that I really liked about it is it actually, like, at the very end, you do get, like, a little hint of what's going on that the whole story is based on. You not only get some human backstory, you get some alien backstory. And I think that's really interesting.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've realized is that when I'll read a trade of a comic, you know, I'll sit down, I'll read it, and then I'll put it away. And then a year later, the next volume comes out, and then I have no idea what, because I've forgotten everything. So I have to go back and read, like, the last couple pages. So I think what I'm going to do is I'll keep buying them as they come out, but I'm not going to read it anymore until they finish the story.
You're almost there.
I think there might be only one more volume after this.
All right.
Yeah.
That's comforting, but also depressing.
Yeah. But that's okay. You're starting a new series here.
Exactly.
Soon.
Yes, I am. I am. I just got Curse Words, which is also by Charles Soule. All right. So yeah, Letter 44, Blue Shift. I guess if people have been following it monthly, they've already read the entire thing.
I realized
that applies to any trade, I guess.
Your worlds are combining because you read God Hates Astronauts, which is Ryan Brown.
Yeah.
And you read Letter 44, which is Charles Soule, and now you're reading Curse Words, which is Charles Soule and Ryan Brown.
Two great tastes that taste great together.
I just put all the connections together. It was great. Delightful. All right.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to Chris Cassell. What do you got?
So I read a manga called So I'm a Spider, So What? Volume 1 by Asahiro Kakashi, based on an original story by Okina Baba. So there are two very specific things happening in a lot of manga fiction right now. One thing is there's a lot of light novels becoming adapted into comic books, and there's also a new genre called the reincarnation genre, which is basically about somebody dying in the normal world and somehow being reincarnated in a fantasy world. I guess it's happening a lot over there, because I already did a review called That Time I Was Reincarnated as a Slime, and I read somebody's review of that, and they were so disappointed in it because they said that this came first and they thought the other one was a retread, and I thought this one came out second. And so I don't know what comes when and how. They're all very similar. So it makes it difficult for me to decide if I need to not like it for that reason. This is still very cute. It's basically about this girl. She dies and she gets reborn as a cute monster spider in a labyrinth. And immediately all the other spiders she's born next to are cannibals and they're eating each other. So she escapes. And she basically has like points to use. So she's basically living in a video game world, and she's just slowly, like, methodically working through evolving herself, and she just basically refuses to die and to starve to death. So it's kind of morbid, but it's also super silly and very cute and very fun. So if you just like the idea of a silly kind of fantasy, I think it would appeal. It's only $13 for volume one. This is by Yen Press. And, but yeah, apparently there's like a bunch of these reincarnation things happening right now.
What do you think that's all about?
I don't know. It's interesting. I'm noticing as I'm reading more manga that there's similar tones of, stories among certain publishers, and I think they're seeking out very specific things, and I think Yen Press has done a few of these, so I don't know, they just have their genres to get popular, and somebody invents one popular subgenre, and they all jump on it real quick. Cool.
There's another one with magic, almost magical stuff where people will have familiars and they're not like cats and dogs, they're humans,
right?
And they have like leashes, and there's this weird, like, almost sadomasochistic relationship, but not always, because sometimes it's like a young kid has like an adult male familiar, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah,
it's also a trend in the stories.
Familiars are a trend.
Familiars,
yeah.
But I'm used to the ones that are like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and stuff. You know,
it's weird.
Yeah, it's all weird. Right. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm a spider. So what?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chris. I saw a picture recently on the internet. It was a picture of a spider, and it said, "If you're cold, they're cold. Let them in."
Yeah.
All right.
Oh no.
Nicole, what do you want to tell us about?
So we talked about the Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales earlier. I read the Donner Dinner Party, and this is a very well-researched graphic novel about the Donner family and groups of other families that join the party to go to California to make their way west. As I had mentioned earlier, there's hazard levels on the back of these, and it says the date. So this one happened between 1846 and 1847, and it's a color blue for tragic, and it includes tuberculosis, hypothermia, starvation, accidental shooting, non-accidental shooting, stabbing, cannibalism, bears, and the eating of well-loved pets. So this things do not go very well. And it starts out with Nathan Hale, who was originally a spy, and his book is One Dead Spy. So if you wanted to read about him, you can. But it's him about in the gallows, about to get hung, and then he's like, let me just tell you guys some stories. And the executioner is kind of this slapsticky character, and he's like, yes, let's have tea time. Let's tell these stories. And as they go through, you learn that there's this family, they're well-to-do, and they decide that they're going to get a caravan together of all these wagons to go west. And at some point, you get a full diagram of all the families involved in the move. There's a lot of people involved, so it does get a little confusing as to who's who and what's what, and it does mostly just highlight and pinpoints times and events that occurred. So I feel like this would be a really good supplementary thing, like if you were doing it in a school, to like read the books that are told in the back. They tell you all the things that the real Nathan Hale, who wrote the book, not the spy, what he read to get all the research down, so it could be good that way. But as they go west, things are going wrong. The main guy decides that they're going to take this thing. I think it's called the Hastings Trail, and it's not a good trail. And everybody's saying like, no, don't do this. It's because they're like, it's going to save time. And everything they hear is like, no, it's actually not. It's going to be worse. But he's so stubborn. He's like, no, we're going to do this. And so at one point the wagons are like, some people are like, nope, we're going to take the regular trail that we know, it's tried and true. And a bunch of the families break off and do this other trail, and while they do make it through the trail for the most part, they're like 50 miles away from California, and they hit really bad snow, and they don't move fast enough to miss the snow. That's when things of cannibalism and bears and eating of well-loved pets occur, and it gets really dark and grim. Mm. And there's even points where the executioner and Nathan Hale come in, and the executioner's like, no, 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 we have to skip to page 113. This is just like too much. And so, and even like it shows like him like turning the pages and that kind of thing. And then they're like, oh, but really, like, people are here for like all the grim, gritty details, you know. So they're, and you know, but you can, if you wanted to skip through some of the parts, you technically could. They tell you where to go. It's kind of like a timestamp on a video, you know.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting. I'm gonna slowly work my way through, I think, a lot of these, because they are very informative and they're very easy to get all that information, and they're a fun way to learn some of your history of non-fun events that occurred in history. And I do really just enjoy their coding system a lot with the different colors for the hazardous tales. So I would recommend this if you're in history. Like, it doesn't matter how old you are. Like, there is the slapsticky quality of the executioner and things like that, but it's not too heavy in there. Mostly it's the actual story of what happened. Mm-hmm. Very well researched. There's even a correction baby in the back that where people can ask questions to correction baby about different things. Like, one of them is, hi, correction baby, if I was a member of the Donner Party, would I survive? And there's a whole diagram, like, are you over 50, under 5? And then you go to either one of those is you will die. But between 5 and 50, okay, well, are you male or female? If you're male, yeah, you probably will die. But if you're female, you probably will live. So, you know, it's weird things like that. And also just like, did this really happen? Was this really wacky and that kind of thing? So you get extra tidbits in the back too, which is really great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Donner Dinner Party. Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. And finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, as I said last week, I've been actually pouring through more prose work than comics. It just has been a weird trend in my life. I've been reading books. So I read Catherine M. Valenti's, I think it's Valent, her book called The Refrigerator Monologues. It's illustrated by Annie Wu. For those of you who are not sitting at this table, Chris, can you help us out for what does it mean to fridge a character?
So Gail Simone coined that, and it's based off of a Green Lantern comic where a new Green Lantern's girlfriend got shoved into a refrigerator so that he can have pathos. And
but killed by the bad guy.
Killed by the bad guy.
And shoved in the refrigerator.
And shoved into a refrigerator. And so it's... Fridging basically means when a female character is killed to push the male character's motivation along.
Right. So Valent was inspired by Gail Simone's discussion of this, or drawing this to public attention, and put together a series. The title Refrigerator Monologues is actually very deceptive. This is a about 147 page book that are all first person narratives, but they're not written to be performed. And the reason why I say that is that they're meant to be read. I don't think you could enjoyably watch even the best actor performing these pieces, because they don't have, there's just a quality to the way they're written. They're not scripts. They're first person narratives that have an arc, but they're too dense. I mean, each one of these pieces would probably be about 15 minute monologue, and there are 6 or 7 of them in this. So I don't think I would enjoy watching a play of all these monologues. I think that's a lovely notion, but it's kind of a misnomer. The other thing that I had trouble with this book, and I did have some some trouble, even though it's a noble, noble effort, and I do respect Valente for putting this together, is that all of the characters featured in this, so let me give you the setup. It takes place in a bar or a cafe in Hell called the Hell Hath Club. As in Hell Hath No Fury, like a woman scorned. And each female counterpart to the superhero, who has obviously died in telling their story from their booth in Hell, is not a particularly original analog to established characters. The first one is, just to give you an example, the first one is the girlfriend, Paige Embry, and she was the girlfriend of Kid Mercury, who is... it took me a little bit to figure out that that's the Flash. And then we have Bayou, what is her name? Bayou, the mermaid lady. And her name is, it's a cool name. Just she actually came up with some clever names. It's like Bayou Barbara, Blue Bayou, who is Mira, Aquaman's wife. They're just very thin analogs and not that tight. There's also one that's a Pretty Polly that's clearly
Mockingbird.
No, Joker and
Harley Quinn.
Yeah. And so I was too busy being caught up in what she was trying to do to pull us away from these very obvious characters that she's referring to. And of course the arc for all of them is all going to be the same. They die. And that was unfortunate, but it was an interesting book, and I am grateful that that Rachel and Bob got it for me for my birthday, because this was a birthday gift and I wanted to read it right away and talk about it. And Valente is a really talented writer. She has got some of the most clever turn of phrases and witty quips and stuff. And you know what? I would love to see this woman write comic books. I think she could write some darn comic books and original comic books. But I understand why she stuck to the referencing of known properties the way she did to make her point. But the point gets old pretty quickly, and it's not a very long book. It's like I said, it's 147 pages, and it was a quick read. So, it had potential that I felt like it fell short of. Are you guys familiar with this book?
I'm familiar with it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah. Yet remember, I'm a privileged white cisgendered male, and I'm coming at it from an entirely different perspective of, say, a woman of 18 who is trying to negotiate the crap of the boy club superhero comics. This book may be something that really answers a lot of questions for that person, and in a good way. So it's not a bad piece of work. It just didn't work for me.
Alrighty.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you, Cole. The Refrigerator Monologues. And that is Book Report, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See not quite everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com.
Just the highlights.
As well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or however you get your shows at Perfect Bound podcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week the questions come to us from me. We talked about comics and as syllabus and syllabi in schools. These are just five questions about educational TV shows. Number one, since 1969, this Muppet human hybrid show from the Children's Television Workshop has been delighting children and adults alike with their playful tone and friendly characters, but have not shied away from tackling such topics, difficult topics as death, divorce, HIV, AIDS, and 9/11. Say it out loud, everybody.
Sesame Street.
I just yell out the answers when I'm done reading the questions. From 1968 through 2001, the general host of this show spoke directly to the viewer about various issues, taking us on tours of factories, demonstrating experiments, crafts, and music, and interacting with his friends. He also made a point to simply behave naturally on camera rather than acting out a character, stating that, quote, "One of the greatest gifts you can give anybody is the gift of your honest self. I also believe that kids can spot a phony a mile away," end quote. What's the show?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Exactly. Number three, Don Herbert, an actor and general science major from Wisconsin who flew B-24 bombing missions over Italy during World War II, created and starred in this TV show, demonstrating, along with his willing adolescent sidekicks, the science of everyday things.
Mr. Wizard.
Exactly. Number four. Hey, you guys! Morgan Freeman got his start on this sketch comedy-based TV show in 1971, which focused on helping elementary school children develop their grammar and reading skills. Since it was intended for youngsters who had graduated out of Sesame Street, the humor was a bit more mature than what was seen there, but not by much. What's the show?
Electric Company.
Exactly. And finally, number five, from 1983 through 2006, LeVar Burton hosted this show, where each episode centered on a theme from a book or other children's literature, which was explored through a number of segments or stories. The show also recommended books for kids to learn. For kids to look for when they went to the library. What's the show?
Reading Rainbow.
Exactly. That is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.